Well, my goodness, I love the book so much. Some fantastic place. It's just a wonderful read. And I think you and Glenn are one of the great songwriting partnerships in the history of rock music. Now, I love this story. Can you talk a little bit about how you liberated some money from your mom's purse to advertise for a guitarist? Is that how you two first got together?
It is. I've been hanging about for quite some time waiting for something to happen in my life, and life was pretty slow, so I stole 50p, which is not a lot of money, but I got it out of my mum's handbag. I put an advert in a sweet shop window and for a guitarist to join a rock and roll band, and Glenn, luckily, was the only person who called up, and consequently, we've been together for 46 years.
Now, how was your collaboration originally? Did you write in the same room? Did you bring each other songs or parts of songs?
At the very beginning, I'd say we kind of both wrote our own songs, and then we sort of realized that our strengths were separated by me writing the lyrics and him writing the music. And for many years, that's really the way that we worked. More recently, it's been a slightly different relationship.
How important was your upbringing, living in council housing, to the music that you guys created?
Well, I think the fact that we indulged ourselves in all sorts of music, from rock and roll to punk and pop music too, gave us the ability to not be sort of too pigeonholed by the music that we made. We could sort of be very flexible about our styles. You know, Glenn and I were very influenced by Sparks at the very beginning and by Todd Rundgren's production. And yet we were listening to Kraftwerk and we were listening to the Ramones. So we were all over the place, really.
And anytime you're in a partnership, there are bound to be some disagreements. And you write in the book, I love this line, that your disagreements with Glenn were often left hanging like underpants on a washing line.
Well, they kind of were and they weren't talked about, but, you know, all great relationships in songwriting or in any business are going to have their fair amount of ups and downs because of the nature of the human. You know, we've had times in the past when we've got on really great and there's been times when we've not sort of talked for months, sometimes years. But it's not too dissimilar to any great relationship that I've investigated. You know, I can look at The Who, Led Zeppelin, Oasis, The Beatles, and all the main protagonists in those outfits had the fair amount of disagreements. But the thing that kept them together, as it does with Squeeze, with us, is the similarities, is that we write great songs, and that's one of the things that keeps us going, I think.
I love the fact that for a while you were living in a flat above Mark Knopfler and the guys in Dire Straits.
Yeah, they were really annoying. They used to play day and night and play the kind of music that they did, which I didn't like in those days. I found it all a bit insipid, but it was only because I was influenced by people like The Clash and Ian Dury and the Blockheads. So, you know, I wasn't in the mood for the niceties of Dire Straits.
We're talking with Chris Difford here on Downtown. His book is called Some Fantastic Place. So you're very open in the book, talking about your struggles with addiction. And Elton John, you say, was a very big help to you during those times.
Yeah, he was massively helpful. He was always there to pick up the phone too, and that was remarkable, really, considering how busy he is as an artist. But we spoke pretty much every day for over a year, and he gave me the ability to kind of walk a straight line, if you like, and to try and be open-minded about my recovery. And I think that was, you know, I'm completely blessed with that relationship too. That's an extraordinary time in my life.
You also worked as a manager for the Stripes. How did that experience change your perspective?
Well, I really enjoy management. It's something that I do occasionally. At the moment, I'm sort of looking after somebody called Honey, who's an 18-year-old singer, who's a fantastic songwriter. And it's just really nice to sort of hand back some of the information that I've had over the years, and try and steer people in a way that might be a bit more open and creative for them. And I think it's, you know, Squeeze made a lot of mistakes on route to where we ended up, and it was for one reason or another, naivety or just bad management, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, I like to be able to pass on that kind of knowledge.
You've been doing songwriter workshops for more than 25 years now. What's the best advice you give to young songwriters?
Just have a sharp pencil and a sense of humor. I think that's all you need. And really the ability to listen to other people that you're working with. I think it's really important that you are not closed in and that you have the ability to share your experiences, life experiences, with other people when you're writing songs, because it's joy. It was a real joy when you get it right.
How's the writing process work for you now? Does a melody come to you in your sleep, walking down the street, or do you sit down and say, well, it's time to get to work and write a song?
Well, as a lyricist, I kind of sit at my desk and I wait for lyrics to arrive. And I'm very grateful when they do arrive. It takes some time to have the discipline to be able to try to just invite the lyric in. And it depends who I'm working with. Some people are a bit more sort of proactive and they prefer the lyric to come a bit quicker. So it depends who I'm working with, really.
I was talking the other day on the show with the great songwriter Jimmy Webb, who's written a wonderful memoir, too. And we were talking about how writing songs, especially writing the lyrics, actually sets you up pretty well to tell the story of your life. And it feels like this book is very much in your voice.
Well, it is, and I'm proud of that. I'm very proud of that because I didn't, you know, I just picked up Roger Daltrey's book today, and it's very much in his voice. And I think that's what's good about books. If you can hear the person's voice in the words you're reading, then you feel connected. And I would have hated it to have been written by somebody else and for them to have challenged the way that I speak or the way that I write, and particularly the way that I feel about things. So I'm very, very pleased with what I've done. And I've been touring the book now for the best part of a year, and I'm coming to America with the book tour, and it's inspiring to do something different.
Well, I've been a fan of Squeeze since the first time I dropped the needle on the vinyl copy of East Side Story. But even your recent work, Cradle to the Grave, The Knowledge, those things stand right up there with the best work you guys have ever done. How do you keep it fresh after 46 years?
Well, I think Glenn is a very determined producer, and when we're working together, he really takes a lot of effort to make sure that we're original and that we're not going back over the same ground. So sometimes it's very challenging to keep up with people that work so intensely, but it's the final outcome is worth the work, really.
The Difford and Tilbrook album maybe didn't get the same level of exposure that the Squeeze albums did, but that's one of my favorites. I think Hope Fell Down stands up there with any of the songs you've done. Love that album so much.
It is a good record, yeah. I'm very proud of it. And it came at a time when both Glenn and I were miles apart emotionally and as friends, I think. But it doesn't really matter because the songs stand out and they speak for themselves. The production, the arrangements in particular on that record are extraordinary. Some of Glenn's arrangements are sublime.
You mentioned the book, which is now out in paperback. You're touring to promote that. What's coming up in the future for you musically?
Well, I'm coming to to tour my book, first of all, and then I don't think there's any recording as far as Squeeze is concerned. I think we're too focused on just taking some time to understand what the next move is, because the industry's changed so incredibly that, you know, you really have to think about what you're doing when you're recording a record, what the return is for it, and how much effort you put, well, not effort, but how much financially you put into records these days. And so we're sort of trying to figure out where we are in that sort of place. But there will be live shows from Squeeze next year. And then apart from that, my one passion at the moment is jazz, and I would really love to record a jazz record. So I'm going to concentrate on that next project, I think.
Well, that sounds wonderful. The book is a delightful read. Some Fantastic Place, My Life in and Out of Squeeze. Chris Difford, I've been a fan for a long time. It's a real treat to be able to talk with you here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Rich. Very kind.